All right. Settle down, everyone. Settle down. Welcome, everyone, to our storyline pitch meeting for the final scenes of our latest blockbuster dark comedy horror franchise, Girl with the Dumpling Birthmark. Jaina, you're up.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start with her getting into her old classic car, you know, the one her uncle gave her right before he died.
Ah, yeah.
Then we see her pulling up in front of that dim sum restaurant where it all started. Mm. She's a little rough around the edges and sad about all her friends dying, but we can see just a little glimmer of hope in her eyes as she goes into that restaurant to finally experience the best dim sum. She sits down and the first steamer basket arrives. She lifts the lid to find it full of her favorite dumplings, and a small smile starts on her face, which slowly changes to concern as she tilts her head sideways at the basket. We pan down to that basket, where we see a single phoenix claw. Nestled in with all those dumplings. She's worried because she didn't order that. Then that claw leaps out of the basket, attaches to her throat, and strangles her. And she falls face first into the dumplings. Dead.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So the voodoo priestess ends up betraying her in your...
Yes, I like
that twist. I like it. Okay. So in my pitch, okay. The priestess doesn't actually betray her, but we're going to start the scene with our final girl seated by the windows in, you know, the dim sum restaurant where it all began. And, you know, similar to yours, she looks tormented and tired from all the deaths and losses. But we get a feeling that maybe it's all over.
Okay.
The camera pans to the table full of steaming dim sum baskets as our girl takes a morsel with her chopsticks and brings it towards her.
Mm-hmm.
And just as she is about to take a bite, bam! An old-fashioned car crashes through the windows and annihilates the girl. Everything is a blur. But the camera refocuses on the wreckage of the car, and we discover that it's that old-fashioned car in her uncle's vintage car lot that gave everyone the creeps in scene 7. The camera then zooms into the hood of that car. And that's when we discover that creepy car was still without an engine.
Ooh.
The curse lives on.
Nice. Yeah. Hi, I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jess's Begantsy.
Moving you from antsy to gansy.
And today...
What are we doing today?
Well, I think people already know what games we're talking about. It should have been abundantly clear from our opening. Maybe it's not. Do you know what games we're talking about?
Are you going to insert cricket sounds with a weird, awkward pause?
I could, yeah.
Post-edit?
Yeah, I could do that.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe it wasn't abundantly clear.
Yeah.
But we're going to be talking about, so hot takes basically on three games.
Ooh, I like hot takes.
Very hot takes. We've only played each of these ones.
Okay.
So the first one is Horseless Carriage.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Steam Up, a Feast of Dim Sum.
Yeah.
And third is Final Girl.
Yes. So now it all makes sense.
Obviously.
They were just all different thematic components that really fit well together.
Yeah, like just it.
Naturally.
The story wrote itself.
It did. It totally did.
All right. Well, we should jump right in.
Okay.
We will talk about Horseless Carriage first.
I like that. I love that game.
Excellent.
Even though I've only played it once. It makes me feel good.
Excellent. That's a throwback to an episode that hasn't. Oh, no, it did air. We're good. We're doing this in the right order. I'm so proud. All right. Right. Horseless Carriage is by Jerome. Oh, gosh. I can't read my writing. Duman and Joris Wiersinger. I just can't pronounce that. I'm so sorry. Better known as, you know, the publishing duo behind Splatter Spelling. It is their latest game. I think first rounds just delivered last 2 or 3 months.
And it has nothing to do with horses.
Yeah, it's horseless, obviously.
Or really your conventional image of a carriage.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what, we don't really know what our cars look like. Ooh, spoiler alert, in horseless carriage, you're designing cars.
Yeah, it's the early 1900s and we're industrialists trying to create a good car. Mm-hmm. So you actually, as a player, get to take on the brand of some, you know, either currently existing brands, or I think there were a couple of brands.
I think they were all currently existing. I remember Ford was in there, Mercedes. Yeah. A couple of European brands,
I had
Ferrari.
A British car. I didn't realize that there's still a UK-labeled car.
I think there's more than one of them.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm not a car person. Yeah, you tell? Anyways, you get to play the brand because you're in it to win it and you're in this race to, you know, create the best design, the best technological advancements in this very new invention, a horse's carriage.
I'm going to quickly run over kind of how the game works and the rules, but I will say of all the Splatter games we played, this one is by far the most complicated rules-wise.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not going to do a great job and it's not going to make a lot of sense, but we'll just run through it. Basically, every round, there's a whole bunch of phases that happen. What you're trying to do is build basically factories into your factory lot, and you're trying to add things. Maybe you want to be able to put an engine in your car. That'd be kind of handy. So you need to build the little spot where you can produce engines. Or maybe you think it's like time for brakes.
Brakes.
Might want to add brakes to your car.
Really?
So you got to add that radical little spot. And all of these things that you're adding on basically all need to track back to your initial, what were they called? Not through line.
Main line.
They have to all connect to your main line. So it's kind of like a polyomino puzzle, except they aren't polyominoes. They're all squares or rectangles. And you have to add in little one by ones to connect everything and mark off what, basically what features your car has. And your board is ever growing every round. You're adding a new spot where you can build more factory tiles. But the catch is you can build as much as you want that you have legal access to each round.
You don't even necessarily need to pay for it.
No, you don't.
You're just grab it.
Building it.
But what because the labor is so cheap.
What this is tied to is these research tracks. So there are some different areas that people are interested in, like maybe speed or reliability. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you're interested in safety. Our people sure weren't, but they could
safety.
Be.
And pish posh.
Every round, there's going to be two of these areas that people are most interested in. And they're going to go along your absolutely table-hogging, overly sized, gigantic main board. One's going to be on the Y-axis, one's going to be on the X-axis. And why are those important, you might ask? So by going up those research tracks, they're going to get you access to different parts you can then add to your car. And each of these parts is tied to a different color. And those different colors are tied to those different things that people might want, the reliability, safety, etc. And as the demands of the public changes, to be able to sell any cars at all, you have to meet the minimum requirements that people want, say, for safety or reliability, whatever those two are in that round that are on the X and Y axis, you have to meet the minimum requirements that people want, or you're not going to sell any cars at all. Then you have to, you know, obviously your factory has to be producing those components. Mm-hmm. And not only that, you need your main line to be connected to your sales floor.
Obviously.
And maybe you want to do some extra marketing. That could be useful. That needs to be connected to your sales floor as well. You also need to add in like extra research stations so you can get more bumps on those tracks. You also have to, you know, throw in Gantt charts in places so you can start controlling turn order.
Mm-hmm. Because Which is super important.
And turn order is kind of a double-edged sword because there's a track on the left side is engineering, on the right side is sales. So if you're to the leftmost side of it, you're high on engineering. That means that you, if you are the first person, you know, the farthest left, farthest at engineering, you can use every single component that anyone has researched. You have access to everything.
Imagine that part is really on corporate espionage, because essentially if you're at the furthest left, you're most advanced, then it gives you a lot more power to be able to use existing patents that your company didn't patent, that other companies patented.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're able to just steal that technology and add that little component to your factory in that turn.
Yep, absolutely.
But you're saying double-edged sword.
Because if you're really good at engineering, you are the absolute worst at sales.
Yes, as so we all know.
Obviously, that's how it works.
Universal truth.
If you've got, you know, cars that have all the parts, access to everything, people are coming to your dealership last.
That's right.
And that matters because you're putting down these little grids, basically, and I'm not going to get into, like, your marketing can increase the size, and these grids are related. Remember how I said that X and Y axis? That basically connects to your huge marketing board, and it's going to be populated with cars that want to buy cars.
It's going to be populated by cars demand.
That want to buy cars. It's cars that want to buy cars. We're not going to...
Okay.
It's populated by cars and they signal the demand of an area. Yes.
It signals a demand in the area because, like, bit of a tangent here, because, like, any successful vehicular baron, you have the money and the power and the influence to really manipulate the market. So what Jaina also didn't mention, because this game, the rules of this game is not convoluted.
I have no idea
enough
what you're talking about, but I'm sure I was getting there.
You also get a chance. I think it was the end of the round, actually. That's probably
why. Yeah, so you do get to manipulate where those cars that want to buy cars go. Everyone gets input. And then there's some random input as well. And depending on where they land on this grid, you know, the farther to the right and the higher up, generally speaking, they're going to pay more for cars.
Because you have better in both the X and the Y axis.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
And there's still more, I'm sure, that we haven't talked about. But I think that kind of gives you the general gist. You want to build a good factory to build cars that people want. And then you want to be able to have access to the farthest right and the highest on those XY axes. And how do you do that? You have to have a whole bunch of basically those markers in, like, the, if they want reliability, you have to, each car you build has to have really high reliability. Then you're going to get access to those upper markets or vice versa. So
this is a game. Lot. This is just a game that really captures the phrase, but wait, there's more. Because I kid you not, I sat down, you know, getting ready to play a splatter game. And I've played a couple of splatter games. And so I expect, okay, it's going to be an elegant game. We're going to learn about the rules. It's going to be so simple, but there's going to be so many, like, nuanced chess moves that we really need to get into. But no. It felt, you know, even through the rules, I was probably pulling my hair out a little bit, because there was more and there was more and there was more and there was more. And then this can impact that and that can impact this and the windows, and there are multiple windows, but then you need to create more space. And but if you put that space, you need to make sure that it's next to that one thing. But it's
you can have more than one main line.
You can. But then, you know, if those two main lines are connected, then only the worst possible combination of cars based on your technology can be created in both. Anyways, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It really is.
It's a lot. And not only is it a lot rules wise, it's a lot to wrap your brain around. Like, I don't think any of us truly understood how that factory design worked and how it really impacted you, like your decisions early impacted you later. And I think every single person who's listened to a review of Horseless Carriage has heard someone say, yeah, you're going to hate your first round self for the decisions you made.
Yeah.
Previous round self. But, you know, you don't really understand what that means and how much, because it's really difficult to understand the implications.
Well, because in order for you to play this game well, and I'm only talking about a single dimension here, which is the factory portion of it and how you maximize the factory space and where you put things, you are playing chess, because you need to make multiple moves in your head if you're actually going to be that person to really min-max your space and, you know, creating, making sure that you're creating an optimally placed main line so that different technology can feed into it and potentially also connecting to a different dealership so that you could expand your productivity and therefore sell more cars. You have to wrap your brain around how you expand your factory floor, what technology factory components gets placed where, how do you create space for growth, and the balance between research and Gantt charts and marketing departments. Like, it's a lot.
It just hurts. And I don't think any of us really truly understood how everything interconnected until we were at least halfway through.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, you know, I was surprised. I almost thought that we were playing, what's that other series of games that usually has really convoluted rules?
Lacerda game.
Right. I thought we were like, what is this? I thought we were playing a Splatter. Why is this giving me Lacerda feels? At the beginning, during the rules, but in the middle of that game, when things starting to make sense and come together,
it clicks.
I'm like, oh, this is such a classic Splatter.
It's so clever.
It is so, so brilliantly designed and clever. And I don't know how these people's brains work because it's so good. It makes me feel good.
Why not a game that makes you feel good? That's nice.
Yeah. It makes me feel bad first, and then it potentially can make me feel good.
It was a good experience. It was a long experience. I think we started with the rules around 2:45, 3 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
We finished with the play around 9 p.m.
Yep.
That said, we did take a food break in the middle. We weren't
Which was
playing
like half an hour.
Yeah, we weren't playing fast.
No.
But
I think that's what it needed. Mm-hmm. That was the right time for a first play, for us to learn, for us to figure stuff out.
And I don't think anyone was desperate for it to end.
No, I don't think
so. Now, that said, I know there's been some mixed reviews on this one, and it is...
What?
It feels like a classic Splatter, but, you know, different somehow.
Really? Okay.
Now, they did have some production issues with this first print run. Mm. So some of the tokens were printed incorrectly, and they put out, like, basically a file you could just print on the sticker sheets. That said, it really affects if you have any color deficiency.
Oh,
for viewing, it really affects you. And the person who actually owned and brought this game for us to play did. And I think it made the game significantly harder for him. Like, it was hard enough for us.
Yeah.
But he had that extra puzzle because basically you're relying, you have little tokens that are designating what color and thus what area each of your parts is connected to. And they're double-sided. And I don't know why they did this. One side is just the color and the background hatching because that matters. Then the other side, they would also have a little three-letter code that you could match to what technology it was. I don't know why they didn't just put that three-letter code on both sides. That would have solved a lot of problems. It doesn't really get in the way.
Anyways.
But so there was a lot of digging and finding. And of course, the things that they sent out, your printer's not going to print and match exactly the color tone of the original. So there are issues. There were some issues.
In short, there were some issues.
In a major part of the game that already burns your brain, because you would think, oh, squares and rectangles, that's not that complicated for polyomino things. Yes, it is.
The setting up and putting away of that game was also considerable.
It was a nightmare.
But I mean, considering how long the game lasted, maybe it is...
It evens out.
Yeah. I think it's a brilliant game. I think you need to be psychologically ready to spend that long playing that game.
And also, you can't play it two-player.
No.
I think most of their games probably play better with three or four, and we did play this four-player, mm-hmm. But you just can't play it two-player at all.
You also need a ginormous table.
We have a gigantic dining room table that seats 8, and we took up the entire table with this game.
And we needed to maneuver things around to make sure our expanding factory actually fit on said table.
So
be warned, it's an absolute table hog. You're going to hate your life if you're learning it for the first time, mm-hmm. at least for the first half hour. You're going to be super confused for the first hour. And then as things settle down and you start to figure out what how things work together, you're going to start to really appreciate the game.
Yeah, so. Hopefully. If you get a chance to play it and you want to play it, just go into it knowing that, like, the first couple of rounds, you're just going to be doing things randomly and you're not really going to understand why. but it really is a learning game, and it should become clear as you get farther into the game.
So okay. That's Horseless Carriage.
We've already spent, like, you know, at least half of our time talking about Horseless Carriage.
Remember how we were like, oh, can we talk about Horseless Carriage? And, you know, how much time can we even spend on that game?
We probably need other games to talk about.
Yeah.
We probably didn't. But here we go.
Okay.
All right. Game number two.
Steam Up.
A Feast of Dim Sum. Mm-mm. And this game is by new publisher Hot Banana Games and designed by Pauline Kong, Heyman Lee, and Marie Wong. Now, this was a recent publisher that just fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And before we talk about the game, I have to say, this is the best run Kickstarter that I have ever seen.
Kudos.
Now, we don't back a lot of Kickstarters, but this one was brilliant. It just stood out. Every month or so, they had a little chart that showed you all the things that they were working on and what phase they were at and when things were ready to ship. We backed it in 2021. They estimated delivery in April 2023. They were bang on. I think some people even got it in March. Their communication was amazing. They posted in one of their updates the most relaxing video I have ever seen of basically their factory flow, like from the start, like printing all the cards, cutting the cards, all of that through to the final boxing of the game. The music is amazing. It's over 5 minutes long and it makes me so happy. I think I'm going to go watch it again now.
Oh my gosh. Have I seen it?
Maybe. Yeah, I think so. It apparently didn't stick with you as much as me. But anyways, so it was an amazing experience with the Kickstarter for starters. Now, what is the game about? Basically, you are going to go visit the most famous dim sum restaurant in, where is it?
The world? China? I don't know. Canton? I mean, dim sum is a Cantonese style of food.
Okay, I thought you'd know the restaurant. Anyways, you're visiting.
There's it's based on like one restaurant?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't pop up.
Okay.
There's a one, really?
Supposedly.
Bold.
Okay, well, Sharon's going to go look this up. And while she's looking it up, I'll explain the game. So you're visiting this restaurant and each person is going to be playing with a unique power. Or, you know, unique animal, basically. And these animals are based off of the Chinese zodiac animals. So there are 12 of them. And each animal gives you a unique power, as well as your little player mat where you're collecting your dim sum is going to vary a little bit from animal to animal. And what you're doing in this game is basically trying to get the dim sum that you want to eat, obviously. And different animals want different types of dim sum, and they're going to score their different types of dim sum. The dim sum itself is on an actual, like, rotating Lazy Susan. And depending on how many players, you're only going to have access to one or two little bamboo steamers at a time. Unfortunately, they're not actually bamboo steamers. That would have been amazing, but probably really hard and wouldn't have worked very well. They're little plastic ones. But still kind of satisfying. You get to take the one on top of it off and see what's in there. So you can claim a dim sum and add them to your player mat on wherever they match up, scoring points that way. There's also fortune cards you can get, and you can play those to give yourself, you know, maybe a little extra benefit or do some extra scoring, manipulate the turntable, things like that. And that's basically the game. You're just going around until you're all full. And whoever got the best level of full and the things they like the most wins.
Because each character has a different set of wants and you can score differently, even though you're collecting the same dim sum.
And that's where those player boards differ.
And I'll have you know that they're not referring to a real dim sum restaurant. It's obviously in the description. It starts with once upon a time in the Far East, deep in the mountains of a mythical land. It's not talking about a real place.
I swear that I saw. Okay.
And there's this riff about this restaurant getting a 3 gold ingot status. Obviously, they're being funny and comparing it to the 3 Michelin stars. So anyways, I rest my case. My foodie status has not been compromised. Continue.
Okay. Well, all right. Now I'm embarrassed.
As you should.
As I should be. So I think we should talk about our impressions.
I liked it, but I didn't love it. But we also just played two players, so I don't know whether this is the optimal number of players that it's meant to play. There was a lot of, I think, almost repetition in some of the luck cards or the fate cards that I drew.
Oh, so the fate cards, I think, come out at the start of each round, mm-hmm. and something will happen that will affect all of you. Maybe positively, usually positively, sometimes negatively. And then the fortune cards are what you're playing. And there's some take that in the fortune cards. Yep. Sometimes there's not. But I think the idea of the game is manipulating that central lazy Susan.
Yeah, because you're only able to access a certain amount based on what's immediately in front of you and
but
lazy
with,
Susan.
Yeah, but with two players, it never really was an issue for us.
No, that's why I feel like we weren't playing it at the optimal amount. So, you know, speaking as someone that's played at two players, this game, contrary to popular opinion, because I think this game is really well received and well loved.
Yeah.
My feeling of this game is just kind of like, eh. I like it because I like food. I love dim sum. It's, you know, thematically, it's the theme of my people. But, I don't get the hype.
I had really high hopes, and it's a beautiful game, and you can tell a lot of love and thought went into it, but at two players it fell a little flat for us. It just, yeah, there was no, you know, those really good games, you get hooked in, and there's this, either you're in that flow zone where your brain is stretched and you're thinking and you're puzzling, but it's not too hard. Or there's like that interaction, you're really trying to figure out, oh, what's your opponent going to do? You're trying to think through all these decisions. And this game just didn't really have either one of those.
Yeah, there just wasn't a moment as you're collecting the dim sum where you feel like, oh yeah, I'm getting closer to the goal. I'm doing good. I'm doing great. So I'm very curious how it plays with more people. So that's, but you know, honestly, we only played it once. This is our hot take.
Mm-hmm.
We also had very high expectations based on the hype and based on the theme of the game and, you know, Canadian designers.
Yes.
Canadian designers, East Asian designers.
Mm-hmm.
So it might also be impacted that way.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the little caveat that they did put in the rule book, because in this game, you get a mix of different dim sum in the same basket, which traditionally, that's not how dim sum is served, and they can explain it. And I appreciate those little details.
Yeah, it felt very true to life. Like, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And the one sort of, I think, a clear, I guess, issue with this game is that, you know, there's one part where you have to grab a dim sum thing blind from the dim sum pocket.
The bag, the sometimes, bag. Sometimes you are drawing blind.
Yeah, and whether it's, you know, you get the nice deluxified Kickstarter version.
It has like little rubberized all the dim sums.
Yeah, so if you, the little shrimp dumplings, the little shumai, the little chicken's feet, they're all like printed little things. They're shaped.
They're squishy.
Same thing with the sort of retail version where instead of the, you know, the little plastic things, it's a cutout
cardboard. Tokens, yeah.
So either version, there's the same issue, which is when you're trying to dig out, randomly dig out a dim sum from the bag, you feel the difference. You know exactly what
you're doing. Yeah, you can feel them.
Yeah.
And they suggest in the rules, oh, just shake one out randomly. We tried that. Well, you tried that, and I think six or seven came out. So that didn't work either. So that was a bit of a design flaw, but it looks really cool on the table. So I guess we can forgive them. We also ordered dim sum while we were playing this.
It was great.
Everything that they had in the game, we ordered.
Of course.
Obviously.
And more. So, yeah. So I think that's our hot take on it. And moving on to the third game.
Yep. Let's do it.
Really, it's just you that have to comment on it. This is a game that you loved, or you were pining for a really long time, and you finally got to play it.
I think that those of you that remember my solo episode way back, I believe that I said this is one of the solo games I was most excited to try. And this is Final Girl. Final Girl is by Evan Derrick and AJ Porfirio and published by Van Ryder Games. And in Final Girl, you are playing as the final girl, that horror trope, that last person who's left. She's lost all of her friends and she has to try and kill this killer all by herself. And I don't know why. I don't like horror movies. I don't like, well, I can't say I don't like deep, like involved solo games with lots of fiddly bits, but I don't play them very often. But for whatever reason, I was just like, I had to play this game. I probably would have bought it, except that I can't buy the games. So thankfully, shout out to Roy, loaned me his core box and a couple feature films to try out. So how Final Girl works is the game itself comes in many parts. You can, of course, buy their season one box or their season two box, or you can buy, you know, the core box and the feature film separately. So the core box contains the main components you're going to need for every single scenario. But you can't actually play without at least one of the feature boxes. So each feature box comes with a location. For example, I played at Camp Happy Trails. It was not happy. And then it comes with a villain. And that villain with Camp Happy Trails, I think was called the Butcher. Creepy dude wearing a pig mask. Yeah. Hopefully not like actual pig skin over his face. Super creepy. And on top of that, if you have multiple feature films, you can mix and match your villain and locations from different ones. So, I mean, really, you've got almost, if you have everything, you have like almost unlimitless combinations. And in the game, as the final girl, you are trying to take out the baddie. And you're doing that through some hand management. So you start out with a certain set of cards, and you can play these cards to basically take an action. But every single time you want to do something in this game, you have to roll dice to find out if it works. You need at least one success for that event to happen. And usually you can get one success or two successes, and the one success will give you, like, you know, usually a good outcome. But if you can get two successes, it's even better. But each die only has one, you know, just pure success face on it. There's also a couple faces that are successes or can be turned into successes, but you have to discard two cards from your hand. So those are actions you're not going to get to take. Or I feel like each die has three blank faces. It's something ridiculous. So it is just pure dice rolling ridiculousness. And here's the thing. I don't particularly like really lucky games. And there is some card management. Like, there's hand management. You're planning once you're used up your cards. There's like every action. Most actions also cost you time. Each round, so you're going down on your time. Whatever time you have left over after you're done taking actions, you can use to buy new cards for your next turn. And so, you know, there's certainly strategy. 100% there's strategy. And then, you know, the evil dude gets to do their turn, and they're probably going to screw things up for you. You're trying to rescue the stupid people. And they are stupid. Like, it's just a very horror movie. And the evil villain might scare them, and then they're going to panic and run God knows which direction, sometimes just right back into the villain. There's event cards that can trigger that make random things happen. And here's the thing. When I'm playing solo games, I've never really looked for... No, that's not true. We have too many bones. But I've never been like a big, you know, going for those thematic games as a solo gamer. Because I find I get more out of those with more than one person. But this is the one game, I think more than any game I've ever played, that just feels so thematic. Like, it really tells a story. Even when your dice rolls are just not happening, it's telling a story. And it's a fun story. So at the start of every game, you're going to flip an event that can shape what's happening. So the first event I flipped was that I have a girlfriend.
Yeah. Hi, it's me.
Apparently that was my girlfriend. She wasn't even here when I was playing, but that's fine. So she came back partway through the game to find that my girlfriend was represented by a white meeple instead of the standard yellow meeples for the idiots. And that's not what they're called. I can't remember what the game actually calls them. They're
I'm glad I'm not an idiot. Continue.
Well, you're a white idiot.
Okay.
Basically, what that did was, if my girlfriend was on the same location as I was, I get to roll an extra die. But if she died while I was in her location, the bad guy got like crazy powerful, like just couldn't risk it. So
what did you do?
So
what did you do? Did you rescue and save your loved one so that she would not be potentially butchered?
No, I hung out villain. With you for a while. I started out with you because that extra dye was really helpful early on.
Shaking my head for the record.
I took you with me for a while. Uh-huh. And that was cool. But I also had an event where it was like stupid teenagers and I couldn't bring as many people with me. Normally you can bring two. I could only bring one. So, you know, I brought you around a little bit. And then I got to a spot where I could have saved you. There's some spots, locations that are going to have like a green border and a little camera for a door or mm-hmm. unlock icon. And if you're there, you can send some idiots off of the game board and get a little benefit when you do. If you save enough people, you get to flip your final girl card over and get like an extra special power. I saved a grand total of one person the whole game.
Everyone else died.
No. But they were still, you know, like in the area with the killer.
I was so angry at you that you had an opportunity to rescue me. So and you're like,
I could have rescued.
Roll an extra die.
I could have rescued her. That's but I was fine. Like, I feel like that extra die is going to be useful. In my defense, I left you a very safe distance from the villain. Like, very safe distance.
I didn't
distance.
Know that. I was living in horror with a pig mask wearing
you
maniac
did
running
panic
around campus.
At one point. At one point, every single person out on the board panicked. But you panicked away from him, so you are smart.
I am smart.
A lot
Thank
of people
you.
Just panicked into a dead end where he was, and that wasn't great. Mm-hmm. But really, like, there's a lot of things going on. It's not super complicated, but, you know, you want to track your horror track because the lower the horror is, the more dice you're going to get to roll. If it gets too high, things just get really bad. Throughout the game, as your killer kills people, they get more and more powerful, so that's not great. But really, Pippin has thoughts. But really, it's just theme and the story was just so much fun. I almost won this game. I was awfully close. Except first I actually died. I was maybe halfway through my play and, well, he killed me. But there's this little special, your last token is health token is a little special one that's an acrylic disc. And when you would lose that last health token, you get to flip it over. And there's, I think, 9 in the game and 3 of them have extra hearts on the back. And you randomly pick one for yourself and one for the villain. So I flipped my heart token over and there were 2 extra hearts. So I got to keep going. I was so excited. That was great. Got another round or so in and I killed the bad guy. Like, I killed him. He was dead. I flipped over his final heart token and he had 1 extra heart left. I was not counting on that. I kind of gambled on that last turn that I'd be able to kill him and all would be well. So he immediately turned around and killed me. So
I have to say
that was sad, but it was exciting.
Not having played this game and only seeing you play it, it was quite a joy. Like, you were just giddy around the game and you were having a good time over by that table playing by yourself, not rescuing me.
It was nice. You didn't die though. So
nice
like,
to watch.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, I don't know. I know that this game is not for everyone. I know a lot of people have bounced off of it, but I can say as someone who does not enjoy horror movies and really shouldn't like this game at all, like all the pieces together, there's nothing in there that jumps out as a mechanism or something that I enjoy. It really clicked for me.
Personally, I think that trope reminds you a little bit of Buffy.
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, maybe. Kind of the reversal of that trope.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe. That might be it. And
you love Buffy, so.
I love Buffy. And it was fun. My friend also loaned me a second box. So, and this is from one of the ones from season 2, because he has the whole Kickstarter, everything. So I'm really excited to dive into that one and see how a different scenario affects things. Because Camp Happy Trails is a pretty easy one to start with. There's no extra rules or anything with the scenario, but I think with the second one there is.
Oh.
So it's going to hopefully change up the game in interesting ways.
Honestly, I do kind of want to play it just based on the theme. It seems kind of cool, but I really don't want to play it solo.
No, well, we can sit down. Yeah. I mean, like, it's a solo game, but we can sit down and play it together.
I think I like that.
And just, yeah, choose things together.
Yeah.
It tells a really good story. Like, this is not a game that's fair. Ridiculous things can happen and you're going to lose and it's going to be super unfair. But it's the story.
So the caveat here is that play this game for the story.
Yes, 100%. And yeah, I'm still thinking about the story that my first game told. And I'm just like, oh, that was great. I came back from the dead. And then the villain came back from the dead. And then he killed me. And I didn't save my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was a joy. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time with it and would I don't know, highly recommend it. And really, like, the core box and each feature film, they're only about 15, 20 bucks each. So, you know, you can just dip your toes in and try a little bit. You don't have to go all in for the whole thing. Do I want to do that? Yes. Once the contest is over, am I going to go buy the whole thing if I can find it? Yes. Yes, I am.
I'm very proud that you haven't already gotten the whole deluxified Kickstarter set.
Right? As you should be. But yeah, I think that wraps up our hot takes on Horseless Carriage, Steam Up, and Final Girl. That obviously are all very interconnected and make perfect sense together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll come back for maybe, I'm hoping to come back for a more tepid take on Steam Up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I'll play it a couple more times with different groups and different player counts.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd love to do that for Horseless Carriage, but that seems like it's a long way off. Yeah. Anyways, have you played any of these games? Thoughts? Opinions? What's your favorite?
You know what's a really good way to share someone's opinions?
No, what?
Reviews and, you know, rating our podcast, subscribing to our podcast, and
you know,
telling
also,
them about friends.
Yeah, telling them about friends, yes.
Telling friends about us, yes.
Yes, that's tell friends about us.
That's how I word.
But maybe with more coherence than Sharon.
Yeah. Well, what am I supposed to do? You left me in the middle of Camp Happy Trails with a scary villain running around.
Oh, are you still traumatized from
I
that?
I am, very
yeah, sorry. So. Sorry about that. He was really creepy. Especially when you, like, flipped him and he had, like, this big sledgehammer. Anyways!
You can also find us on our Discord channel, our BGG Guild, and even Instagram and email. Check out all of that in our show notes.
Yes!
But until then...
In the meantime... Oh, yeah. Well, that was awkward. Oh. All right. Happy gaming!
Stay gassy.